Like a deadly plague in a B-movie, clouds of dicamba herbicide lifted up from where sprayed to kill crops across 10 states. And so we ask, who is responsible for the dicamba drift?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 1072nd edition of the Food Chain right here on the GCN Radio Network. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends way down there in Port Stanley who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Or whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I'm Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Jason Struby on the board. Hello, Jason.
Greetings.
Working that phone, big guy?
That's right.
Okay. Folks, they promised genetically engineered crops would make it possible for America's farmers to use fewer pesticides like the herbicide glyphosate, which you may know by the trade name Roundup. But according to statistics mined from the National Agricultural Statistics Service, the use of glyphosate increased by 6,504% between 1991 and 2010. And that was a half a decade ago. In fact, farmers sprayed so much glyphosate, weeds they were trying to kill developed resistance and became super weeds. To combat super weeds, the Monsanto company re-engineered its patented glyphosate-resistant crops, they call them Roundup-ready crops, to also resist the herbicide dicamba, and they named that Roundup Extend. The problem with dicamba is that it has a tendency to drift from where it was applied. To understand what happens when dicamba drifts, listen to this label description for a brand of dicamba called Banvel. May cause injury to desirable trees and plants, particularly beans, cotton, flowers, fruit trees, grapes, ornamentals, peas, potatoes, soybeans, sunflowers, tobacco, tomatoes, and other broadleaf plants when contacting their roots, stems, or foliage. So, bad news. To combat this drift problem, Monsanto developed a new formulation of dicamba it claims will stick to where it's sprayed. However, this new formulation has not been approved for use by the EPA. The EPA's lack of approval notwithstanding, Monsanto sold its glyphosate dicamba-resistant seeds. Farmers bought the seeds, planted them, and then sprayed their croplands with the older, non-sticking formulations of dicamba to kill their superweeds. But like that deadly plague in a B-movie, clouds of dicamba lifted up from where they were sprayed to kill crops across hundreds of thousands of acres in 10 states. And so today we ask, who is responsible for the dicamba drift? Is it Monsanto? Is it the farmers? Is it the federal government? Who is responsible? Well, today we have, today we have with us Steve Smith, who's returning to the Food Chain after, you were here in number 962, which makes it 110 shows ago, Steve.
Well, good morning, Michael. It's good to be back with you.
So when you were last here 110 shows ago, weeks ago or so, you made the prediction that that when this dicamba was used, it would caused a lot of trouble, and you were kind of like seen as like the Cassandra of agriculture. People looked at you and said, oh, Steve Smith, you really don't know what you're talking about. But turns out you did.
Well, you know, I'd like to say that I was maybe sort of on target on my prediction before, but it turns out that I may have even been short in the kind of damage prediction that I made at that point. We knew without a doubt that there was going to be a lot of issues with this and was certainly warning everybody. As it turned out, we've had a miner's canary incident in Missouri and Arkansas and Tennessee that is alerting the wider group of agriculturalists now to the exact danger that this possesses.
Well, you're a spokesperson for Save Our Crops. Now, what exactly is Save Our Crops? It sounds like Save Our People almost.
Well, certainly Save Our Crops was put together by a group of processors, growers, institutions, associations like the Indiana Vegetables Growers Association or Pennsylvania Vegetable Growers, and a lot of concerned individuals that foresaw what the situation was going to be once dicamba was widely used. I think maybe you have to be a little older, like I am, to remember back in the days when dicamba was one of the few choices for use on broadleaf weeds. And it didn't take too long for everybody to figure out, hey, when I spray this, I just injured my neighbor's crop. And for the most part, dicamba since that point has been limited to only being used in remote areas or on pastures or wheat where there was not adjoining crops that was going to be susceptible to injury.
Okay, so everybody was kind of aware of the fact that this was going to happen, and you stood up with your organization, Save Our Crops, and said this is going to happen, and by golly, it did happen. You know, before we proceed, Steve, I had an email response to our press relief from the show from Dr. Harold Reitz. And he says, Michael, I hope before you jump on the anti-Monsanto bandwagon, I hope you will take time to study the facts. While there are some negative stories that get the headlines, we also need to recognize the reduced use of chemicals that has resulted for the Monsanto system. Also, we need to ask how many people in the world continue to be underfed and suffer illness and death because some of the do-gooder anti-science crowd have. Are you part of that do-gooder anti-science crowd? I don't think you are.
No, absolutely not. There's no question that technology has been a positive force in trying to feed the world's population. And also, as he indicated, on in terms of conservation tillage, and all those things that some of this technology has allowed to happen in a much better way. And there was not going to be an issue until a older chemistry that everybody knows is not good at staying where it could was brought into the system.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole technology itself, absolutely not. Save Our Crops has not been opposed to technological advances. We just know that we can't have our crops injured and have been speaking out about it.
Well, good. Well, what we want to do is, as I responded to Dr. Reitz, I suggested, you know, he pick up the phone and join us today. And hopefully he is listening and will pick up his phone and join us and speak up for the Monsanto system. We're at 831-479-1080, 831-479-1080. We'd love to open the phone lines to anybody who would like to stand up for Monsanto. Love to hear it. Pick up your phone and join us, 831-479-1080. Lordy knows we've tried to get Monsanto on the air about 800,000 times and have failed to do so far. So maybe they'll call in today. Who knows? So to help people understand, you know, what exactly is happening, let's go back before 1996. How did farmers, like those of which are part of your organization, how did they manage weeds?
They managed weeds in an older conventional way, mainly by the use of pre-plant herbicides. In other words, things that were going in before the crop was planted and worked into the ground. And that's still a very, very good system, and it's something that should have been continued even after the advent of Roundup Ready technology. Because what eventually happened, as we all know, is that once people depended solely on Roundup, we started getting resistant weeds. If we had maintained a balanced approach in the commodity world of using these other modes of action of residual herbicides and Roundup in addition, we could have still been using this technology, and the need for dicamba-tolerant crops would have never arisen. At least there would have been a long time yet before it was.
Mm-hmm. So before there was glyphosate, before there was the Roundup Ready crops, We used a pre-emergent herbicide, so we essentially killed the weeds before they had a chance to get started and went from there. But then Monsanto came out with its Roundup Ready crops, with its genetically engineered crops, and the whole world changed. And we're going to talk about that whole world of change when we come back. This is the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson, today we're talking about dicamba drift. Might not be an issue to you unless you happen to eat food. Then it might be. We've got Steve Smith here with Save Our Crops. Why on earth would you have an organization called Save Our Crops? Sounds kind of serious to me. 831-479-1080. Special invitation to all you out there who would like to speak up for Monsanto. Love to hear you. 831-479-1080. Right back.
Wow, MetroFarm.com says we can earn a 5-, 6-, or 7-figure income by farming a small parcel of land in or near the city.
And we don't even have to own the land, we can lease it year to year.
MetroFarm.com says we can grow fruit on prairie bench lands, houseplants in coastal valleys, vegetables in city greenbelts, and ornamentals in neighborhoods of fancy homes.
We can even grow flowers on our wooded hillside.
Get all the information you need to grow for profit at MetroFarm.com, including the complete guide to earning 5-, 6-, and 7-figure incomes by farming small parcels of land. Meet the farmers who earn the money. Find experts at MetroFarm.com who will examine your property and assess which crops to grow. Meet consultants who will help steer your project to profitability. And get the latest news about the business of growing high-value specialty crops for the city at MetroFarm.com.
We've always dreamed about farming a small parcel of land. At MetroFarm.com, we can get all the help we need to stop dreaming and start growing.
Welcome back, folks. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson here, and we're talking about dicamba drift, and especially we are talking about a system of growing crops, some called the Monsanto system, and how it really, in effect, changed agriculture for just about everybody, even those who do not use Monsanto's system, like Steve Smith and his farmers with Save Our Farms or Save Our Crops. You do not use those technologies, do you, Steve?
No, in the specialty crop industry, conventional weed control is the way we do it. There are no GMO types of vegetable crops.
Okay, good. So Monsanto came along 1996, introduced Roundup Ready crops. Now, for those out there who do not know what that means, would you give us a thumbnail?
Sure. Roundup Ready system transformed a plant into being able to receive a dosage of the herbicide glyphosate, and it was able to not affect that particular plant because of some changes that they put into it in a GMO technology. And it really revolutionized particularly Midwest and Southern agriculture between cotton and soybeans and corn as the main three crops that was able to utilize that. And it was an amazing invention. It made good farmers out of everybody until it was overused and we started to get the resistant weed problem.
Well, you know, the great promise of GMO technology was that, hey, this stuff will allow farmers to use far less pesticides. And yet the reality was quite the reverse. According to the USDA statistics, the amount of glyphosate increased by 6,504% between 1991 and 2010. That's just like huge amount of increase. And with that,
it was a big increase, but some of the other herbicides that was being used was a decrease. And so for a season, that's true that we have been using fewer herbicides due to this technology. But now that it was misused and mishandled, we're going to have to go back to using even more to combat the issues now.
And the reason, when you say misused, so what happened is that we used a lot of it, and we used only it, and because we used so much of it and only it, the plants came to recognize that how to get away with it.
sure. In any population, it's just like antibiotic resistance in humans. If you have a large enough pool, there's going to be an individual that survives. And as that individual survives and reproduces seed, then that resistance spreads into the general population.
Really quickly. And so we now have a population of super resistant pigweeds, right?
Pigweeds and many others. I think the last count I saw was that there's 24 different species that are resistant to glyphosate now, and that number is rapidly increasing, and it still works on maybe over 300 species of weeds, so it's still an effective weed control, but it's fast becoming resistant to some of the most problematic weeds that we face.
Okay, so then the solution, of course, was to develop new genes, new crop genes that are resistant to both glyphosate and dicamba. Now tell us a little bit about dicamba.
Dicamba was developed back in the early 60s, and it's a it attacks a plant's hormones, and it essentially just grows itself to death.
It grows itself to death?
Yeah, it'll get all twisty, and the exact mode of killing it is a little bit different than a conventional type herbicide. It's along the same lines. It's not the same thing, but it's along the same lines as the way that 2,4-D would kill a weed. And it's a little bit different mode of action. And different modes of action is very important in combating weed resistance, so that as a weed becomes resistant to one, the other mode of action will kill it and not allow that population to survive. But what happened was that it was so effective and so economical and so easy to do, and it allowed people to expand their acreages so much that people relied on it for corn and beans.
So are you talking about glyphosate now?
Yes, glyphosate. Year after year, that became the only mode of action. So dicamba is an older herbicide that does kill broadleaf weeds. It does not kill grasses, just broadleaf weeds. And it's very effective and very economical. And so I'm sure the conventional wisdom was, well, let's mate these two things up together, and we can now kill our resistant weeds. But essentially, what happens when you do something like this is you have a resistant population to glyphosate, so you introduce dicamba, and eventually you'll have a resistant population to dicamba if people don't steward this product correctly.
And then we're right back to where we started originally then, because we have to come up with something new kind of. So it's kind of, I guess the Monsanto system is a pretty good system. If you're Monsanto, and if you're a farmer, like you said, the system makes good farmers out of everybody, because
it'll just kill all your weeds, and your fields will look pretty and clean. So it is a good system, but it was never shepherded and never stewarded as it should have been, and people took the easy way out. And that's what's probably going to happen with the new technology that dicamba. Eventually it'll do it. Now, there are other options of switching those modes of action, like I described, but if people find that this system is too easy and too cheap, they'll rely on this system totally again, and it won't be long before we're back in the same thing. And it's not that we won't be any worse. We will be worse off, because we will have lost the complete mode of action and how to kill certain weeds.
It's really quite similar to the situation we face with respect to antibiotics then, correct?
Yeah, it's almost exactly the same scenario, that as you keep introducing a new antibiotic and you become resistant, eventually you run out of modes of action of antibiotics, and it's the same thing with weed control. If we continue to not use these products in a correct way, we're going to end up with nothing to kill weeds.
Well, then who would be around to, you know, to ensure that people use them in the correct way? Nobody's been able to do that with the, with the animal husbandry industry were with respect to antibiotics. I mean, you know, you see some consumer groups and some, you know, companies that serve those consumer groups saying, hey, quit using this stuff or we won't buy your food. But is anybody doing that for like soybeans?
Well, there is a good movement underway by like university extension people to do this. And there is enough information out to educate farmers on how to not to do this. But economics usually trump things. And when the economics say to do this over and over and over again because it works and people are in a cash pinch with low commodity prices, even when they're not in a cash pinch, human nature is to take the easy way out. And that's exactly what we did for 15 to 20 years, and this is where we've ended up.
Quickly to Georgia. Georgia, you have a comment?
Hi, Michael. I'm not calling to stand up for Monsanto, but I am calling to ask if you have seen the new movie that has just been released called Consumed.
No, it's I haven't.
Okay, you need to see it, and so does your listening audience. It's all about Monsanto, and it has been released on Netflix.
Consumed.
Consumed.
I will check that out on Netflix.
Well done. Shows the both sides, from the farmers to the consumer, and how it affects people.
Thank you very much, Georgia. Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson with Steve Smith of Save Our Crops and You, 831-479-1080. Anybody out there to speak up for the Monsanto system? Love to hear from you. Well, a couple years ago, 110 Food Chain Radio shows ago, Steve Smith from Save Our Crops came on the Food Chain Radio Show and said, boy, drift happens. And if we're not careful, it's going to happen here with this new dicamba, use of dicamba. It's going to, we spray dicamba on crops. It's going to kill the weeds, but it's going to kind of pick itself up and move on and kill other crops as well. How does that work, Steve? How does dicamba kind of like, it's almost like some kind of weird plague in a B movie, you know, when it picks itself up from the swamps and in the dark of night and then moves someplace else and really raises hell that way. How does it work?
Well, I've often described it as the blob that ate Tokyo.
It is like that, isn't it?
It is, because what you're saying is exactly true. This particular chemistry has a tendency to, after it is sprayed onto a crop or even bare ground, will volatilize. And once it volatilizes, then it will pick up and go wherever the breeze takes it. And it's been known to go miles and miles and cause injury well far away from where it was put, and it can do it for days after the application. And so this is why we knew that not only, you know, farmers have to be very careful when they're applying so that they don't get direct drift of actually just blowing onto a neighbor's crop, but even most careful farmer, when he would apply this and have it pick up and move two or three days later in any direction, it's very disconcerting of what the potential injury of this is going to be. And lo and behold, it's exactly what we saw this year in Arkansas, in southeast Missouri, and Tennessee mainly, but other places where it was tried too.
Well, let's go to the 2016 dicamba drift and kind of give folks an idea of exactly what happened. First of all, we know that the crops have developed the weeds have developed a resistance to glyphosate, which had before killed them, and now they're not, the glyphosate is not killing them. So Monsanto re-engineered its Roundup Ready crops and made Roundup Ready Extend crops, which is to say that crops are resistant to both glyphosate and dicamba, correct?
That's correct.
Good. And then Monsanto sold that genetics to the farmers and said, hey, look what we have here. We have crops that are resistant to glyphosate and dicamba, which means you can spray the bleep out of your crops with both things, and that will kill the weeds for you, right?
Sure. Yeah, that's what the plan of attack was. That's for sure. And the seed received approval by USDA, in that the genetics itself was safe. And because the EPA had not yet put out an approval for application on soybeans and cotton, they sold the crop anyway. And that's where the problem started.
So the crop was approved, but it wasn't approved. Well, I guess the crop was approved, but what wasn't approved then?
The actual use of dicamba to spray on the crop has never been approved by EPA.
Okay, so the crop is approved. The crop is approved. The dicamba resistant crop was approved, but the use of dicamba on those crops was not approved.
That's exactly right, and that's where maybe, you know, it might turn out to be a good thing to warn us about the problems that are looming out there, that if that we had not have had this year's experiences, as painful as what it is for a lot of people, if we hadn't had this year's experiences, everybody would still be like they were 110 radio shows ago, thinking that I'm like Chicken Little or something.
Yeah, the Cassandra of agriculture, yeah. So imagine yourself a farmer of soybeans, and you've got a field full of pigweeds, and they're resistant to glyphosate, and Monsanto comes and says, well, look what I have for you here, and only you can't use dicamba on it. And the farmer says, yeah, right.
Yeah, it's kind of a wink, wink. You know, we've got this new product, but you can't use it. And, I think people are smarter enough to know that that was going to happen anyway.
Isn't that like kind of like going on vacation and leaving the keys to your car with a teenager and telling him not to drive?
You can make a lot of analogies of a similar type thing. But certainly in this instance, the weed pressure on these farmers is great. And the cost of trying to control them by conventional means is great. And they said, well, here's a solution, except you can't do it.
And they did it.
And they did it. I don't know what percentage did it, but it must have been a pretty high percentage.
So what happened out there in farm country with the dicamba drift of 2016?
Well, what we're hearing and has been confirmed by both public regulatory agencies and from universities is that we have now in excess of over 200,000 acres of soybeans that were severely injured and will have a substantial crop loss this year. From it, we've got stories of...
So those soybeans would not have been the GMO soybeans, right?
That's right, because a lot of people still did not buy this because at the time of this year's planting, the European Union had never approved dicamba technology DNA coming in their soybeans. Since then, they have. But a lot of people did not plant them because they might not have had a market for the soybeans. So maybe we received a little bit of a break by the Europeans by not approving it and pretty much limiting the exposure in 2000.
Yeah, but for those people who didn't buy the GMO or soybean seeds, and they had their crops destroyed by those that did have the GMO dicamba seeds because they sprayed their fields thinking, heck, I can get rid of all the pigweeds and sorry about you down the road, but didn't mean it, you know, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, there are people that could lose their farms over this situation. And, you know, I suppose if you're Monsanto and you view this as it doesn't matter if I have a poison snake out there, as long as I've got the antidote, you know, I'm okay. If I'm the only one that has the antidote, you have to come see me. And currently that's the situation we're under.
Now, I understand that Monsanto's developed a new kind of dicamba that allegedly does stick, stay where put?
They say they have, but they've never given it out to any universities for testing at this time. The only testing is the numbers that they've put out. So we have really no way of knowing whether this is actually a functional betterment or not. The data I've seen is that it is somewhat better, but it's still not going to be good enough. And I always talk about the statistics, a likelihood of getting run over by an 18-wheeler. The statistics show that you're not in very good shape. Statistically, though, if you got run over by an SUV, you might have a better shot at surviving. But if you're dead, you know, if you're dead, the statistics don't really matter.
They don't really matter. Hey, when we come back, I'd like to ask about the difference that the Monsanto system... Welcome back out there. Michael Olson here. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Today we're talking with Steve Smith, Save Our Crops, about the 2016 dicamba drift. 10 states, 200,000 acres. But hey, wait a minute. Here we have somebody who has something good to say about Monsanto. So we'll pick him up. Tony, welcome to the Food Chain.
Yeah, I think you know me, Tony. You're my favorite host. And I thought I listened to what Mr. Smith is saying, and also what he doesn't say. So I apprehend that Monsanto has never poisoned a worker when they spray him in the field, and none of their workers have ever had any deleterious effects, medical effects, from the application of these wonderful products.
Mm-hmm. So it does. It hasn't hurt.
Is that true? Is that true? Does it hurt people or does it not?
Well,
the actual product itself.
That's a great question, Tony. Thank you very much. And, you know, I guess when Steve and I last worked together, as it were, we were at the International Biotech Convention in Chicago, even shared a ride to the airport, I think, that day. So here we have these people who are have their hands on this incredible technology that is making... you know, life really good for farmers. And if you're a farmer, you got to love this stuff. All you have to do is spray it, and it kills all the weeds, and life is good. But what about for the rest of us, Steve? What about for those of us who eat the food?
Well, I'm not a human health expert, and I guess I would say that I do trust the FDA and EPA to do the proper testing of these things.
Do they test these things? From what I understand, they don't.
They're all tested extensively, and so you know.
But not by the government. The government just takes the research done by the companies that manufactures them, as I understand it.
Yeah, that may be true too, but they're all scientific type testing, and the safety of the compounds that are used in agriculture have been pretty well studied and looked at, and I think that you know, we almost have to rely on the data that says that we're not going to be harmed all. But I'm not a human health expert, and so that's not my area of expertise.
We can set that issue aside. Thank you for raising it anyway, Tony. 831-479-1080 is the phone number. If you have something nice to say about Monsanto, we'd love to hear it. Tony did bring up that issue of health. I guess we'll set it aside. But what happened to the farmers then throughout the central part of the United States when they were given these dicamba and glyphosate resistant seeds? They planted them. Those who had the dicamba resistant seeds felt secure in spraying their fields with dicamba, but those farmers who did not have the dicamba resistant seeds were put upon by the herbicide that harmed their crops. That's the essence of what happened, right, Steve?
Yeah, truly innocent people here have been harmed by this. It's totally people that have been hurt had no hand in their own demise on this. And like, there's a peach farm in Missouri that has suffered over $2 million worth of damage this year. He had nothing
coming his way that he deserved or should have received.
And who would he sue? I mean,
well, that's part of the problem with this stuff moving in a volatile fashion. You know, we may never know where the products came from. And that's what is very scary on all this, because at least with direct drift, you can go to your neighbor and say, look what you did here. But with volatile products that can move great distances, you just don't have that opportunity to prove where something came from. As a matter of fact, if we get widespread use, it could have come from three or four different places and all combined. And so that's what our real fear is, that not only are we going to lose our crops, but people are going to lose their livelihoods.
Well, it sounds like that is kind of what the situation is, because if you lose, you know, $2 million for the crops and you've you know, kind of bet the farm on that, you've borrowed money from the bank, and the bank looks at you and says, well, tough.
That's essentially correct, and a lot of insurance providers may not be very willing to pay claims, even if it can be traced on something that was an illegal application. And so there's the
so if you bought crop really so you bought if you bought crop insurance and an illegal use of dicamba was made and it destroyed your crop, and the insurance company looks at you and says, that was illegal. We don't insure for illegal things.
That's correct. The RMA insurance policy does not compensate on things that are in the hands of man. But the sprayer's liability insurance may decide that they don't want to pay that either. And so, you know, people are really going to be exposed. The real acrimony on this of neighbors, harming neighbors that they sit on church boards with and on school boards and go to ball games with, this thing could really affect the rural acrimony.
You know, it seems to me like the only solution is to buy Monsanto's system. Because if you're outside of Monsanto's system and you have crops that are not resistant, you could lose your farm by accident or by design of somebody else, and you have what appears to be no recourse. When we come back with the final few moments of the food chain, where do we go from here? If you're a farmer, if you're a consumer, if you're Monsanto, this is The Food Chain. We will be right back. Well, Steve Smith, as spokesperson for the member organizations, the member producers of Save Our Crops, what do you say to a system that has, a Monsanto system that has become so dominant and so dangerous and so threatening to your farmers? How are you going to survive this?
Well, we're right now counting on the EPA to do the right thing. We're counting on state regulators like the Indiana Pesticide Review Board, and every state has its own state regulators. We're counting on everybody to step up to the plate and put the kind of restrictions and common sense and reasonable restrictions on these products to where it can still be useful for farmers but not injurious to their neighbors.
And well, how's that though? If there's no controlling it, if you spray it and it does its work and then it vaporizes and drifts off with the wind, how do you control something like that?
Well, one of the ways you control it is not allow applications after temperatures start to rise in the spring. So, for example, in our part of the world, maybe the regulatory agencies determine that after May 1st, none of this can be sprayed at any time, and that would take a large part of the risk away. Doesn't take it all away, because there are trees that are leafed out, and there are some early gardens, and there might be some early crops, early soybeans that's been planted that might still get injured. But it would take a large piece of the risk away. The other things that we've actually petitioned the EPA to make dicamba a restricted use pesticide. where the sales can be tracked to make sure people are using proper formulations and who's doing what with it. So there are some things that we can do to reduce the risk outside of completely not approving it, which it wasn't approved this year, so we know that that doesn't work. But fines by the regulatory agencies, Arkansas is trying to raise their fine level to $25,000 per incident.
But you can't even track the incidents. You can't really track who did it.
That's true. You might, though, be in a situation where only one farmer in an area did it. And you could, then if it was a restricted-use pesticide, you could track who bought it and where it came from. So there are some things. Probably going to zero risk is not reasonable to assume. But we can lower the risk dramatically by some common sense and reasonable measures.
Mm-hmm. So what can we city folk do to help you guys out there? You're growing our food.
Well, the comment period for this has already come and passed. It was in May and June. And we got a lot of great comments from consumers and consumer groups. But really, right now, the only thing you can do is if you're seeing damage is to make sure it gets reported and gets into the system so that the people making decisions have an accurate view of what's really happening out in the world.
Mm-hmm. Well, folks, there it is. I guess they call it the Monsanto system. And if you're Monsanto, it sounds like a pretty darn good system. And if you're a Monsanto farmer, it sounds like it's a pretty doggone good system. But if you're not, it doesn't sound so good at all. And if you're not, how do you go about saving your crops so that you can sell them to people out here who happen to eat food? Steve Smith, thank you so much for joining us, spokesperson for Save Our Crops Coalition. And thank you all for tuning in as well. Remember Mike Olson's third law of the food chain, cheap food isn't. Thank you, Steve.
Thanks a lot.
Been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.